Employee answers EEOC investigator's question about charge filed another employee. They take a call. They answer questions. Can't be fired for that. Can't be demoted for that. Employee informs a supervisor that he needs an accommodation for a mental illness in the form of an adjusted schedule. That's protected. You go through the analysis whether it's a reasonable accommodation, but you can't penalize the employee for asking. Employer inquires about whether he or she is properly classified as exempt. That's the FLSA that Susan will be talking about, exempt from overtime. Okay, you'll know all about that by about 11:59 a.m. this morning. Okay, that's part one, protected activity. Part two, adverse employment action. What is an, obviously something bad has to happen to you, right? Otherwise you wouldn't be suing. But what is something bad? Well, the Supreme Court actually definitively answered this question, which is kind of like you got to be careful what you pray for, because what they said was anything that well might discourage a reasonable employee from complaining in the future is an adverse employment action. Anything that well might. First of all, I don't even use that expression ever, so I really feel uncomfortable with that standard. But, you know, it's not a hiring and firing and a demotion and promotion and, you know, a pay raise. No, it is anything that might, that well might. So what does that include? If I complain of discrimination and then the employer says, I need you to work through lunch tomorrow, right? Because, we're short staffed tomorrow. And the only reason that I did it is because I didn't appreciate the complaint. That might discourage a reasonable person from complaining in the future, right? Like, I'd like to have a lunch break. You know, it came up because someone got another schedule, another shift, same job, same pay, everything, but they got another shift. And they considered the shift that they got after they complained to be undesirable. And that was enough for the Supreme Court. So pretty much anything bad that might discourage a reasonable person, that's what an adverse employment action is. Okay, and then we have a causal, so we're talking about the prima facie case, right? Protected activity, bad thing happened. You need one more thing and only one more thing, and which obviously, common sense, they have to be related. One has to cause the other, right? If they just both happen and one is not related to the other, you don't have a retaliation claim, right? Well, how do you show a causal connection or a connection between the protected activity and the adverse employment decision? Well, let's go through some. First of all, the big one is knowledge. Do you know that the employee complained? Because a lot of times you don't, and it's my favorite defense, right? Because it's like, hey, you can't retaliate against someone for doing something that you didn't know that they did, right? It's obvious, and it's just a matter of, you know, does the person who makes the decision know about the complaint? Second, and this is the other huge one, timing. If I complain on a Monday and I'm fired on a Tuesday, that's a lot more likely to be related than if I complain on a Monday and I'm fired a year later. Fair, right? And so that the timing of retaliation is huge. I mean, I can't overstate it, right? It is the number one, assuming knowledge, is the number one piece of evidence that the employee will use to express causation. Third, employee complains, and then the employer says, oh man, now we're gonna have HR in our business for the next 3 weeks as they investigate this, thanks a lot. Well, that's a negative reaction if I've ever heard one, right? And I don't know if I've ever had a case that was that bad, but people do sometimes say negative things, particularly for work-related injuries. You know, there's workers' comp retaliation is a big one. In fact, remember we talk about damage caps, right? In a lot of cases, workers' comp retaliation has none. It's one of the more dangerous claims in Texas. A negative reaction from an employee injury, you know, kind of because it's going to complicate the supervisor's life, they're not going to be able to use them, you know, those kind of things. Okay, other things. Well, what if you act in a way that is contrary to what your policies say you'll do? That's certainly evidence. You know, we're talking about circumstantial evidence here, right? They're just things that might be more likely than not to prove something. That's all we need. So if the employer violates its own policies in terminating or committing the adverse employment decision, that's going to be a factor. What about if the employer treated the employee differently, usually more harshly, than similarly situated people who have not complained? Pretty good evidence, right? Like, okay, well, I complained and I was, you know, I had this bad thing happen to me and this person didn't complain and didn't have this bad thing happen to them, right? That's another piece of evidence that they could use. What about the strength of the employer's evidence in support of the action taken? Is it arbitrary? Is it based upon really compelling facts? Sure. What about the existence and strength of an emotion or motive to retaliate by the decision maker? Like, why would the decision maker care if the employee complained? Do they have a motive? Is this something bad for them? Or does it not matter to them? Okay, so that's kind of some practical ways that you analyze retaliation claims. When you're talking about where the rubber meets the road is obviously when you're thinking about disciplining somebody or terminating them when you know that they've engaged in protected activity. It's a terrible position to be in because you know that you want to terminate them, but they have this protected activity that has occurred recently, and you don't want to give anyone the idea that one's related to the other.